Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. No advertisers on this episode. Just you, the members, that make this possible. If you're not yet a member, please do so at members.charliekirk.com. Members.charliekirk.com. My conversation with Riley Gaines, live from Dream City Christian Church here in Phoenix, Arizona. We talk on stage about her experiences, and then we take some unscripted questions from the audience. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Remember, no advertisers, so please become a member at charliekirk.com and chip in however you can, charliekirk.com. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, and text this episode to your friends. Enjoy this exclusive conversation with Riley Gaines. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
What a great turnout tonight. Welcome to the fall, everybody. This is excellent. We have a very special guest tonight, so I'm not going to spend too much time introducing. But first, I just want to say it is so encouraging and heartwarming to see this event grow and grow and grow. We've taken this all across the country. We've done this in Virginia. We've done Freedom Night in America in Albuquerque. We now have an amazing community of local pastors that we meet with before these events, where we are growing the movement to talk about the church taking a stand for biblical values, taking a stand against tyranny. I have a couple verses I want to share, but I'm going to just get right to the thing that that's on my heart, and I think we can all agree. And Luke, I hope I'm not talking out of turn. If they try to lock us down again, we are not going to comply with the government. We're not going to do the masks. We're not going to shut down the churches. We are not going to comply, period. Okay, I got that off my chest. Am I good to say that, Luke? Say it again. Dream City Church will not comply if they try to shut down this church. Right? And if this is not your church home, then this probably should become your church home. Because how many churches in the Valley would say that boldly and clearly? I love the Barnetts. You guys are led so well here. So there's this movement. I've been doing this for 11 years, speaking on college campuses. You know, I've given over 2,000 speeches in the last 11 years, literally in every corner of the country. And about 5 or 6 years ago, you started to see this movement that at first seemed on the fringes. And it wasn't anything necessarily new. Many of you remember growing up this idea of men cross-dressing. We used to call it transvestite, right? It was kind of on the fringes. It wasn't really something we talked about a lot. But as Ernest Hemingway famously wrote, things happen gradually and then suddenly. It's like we woke up in a different country. And one of the themes that we talk about here a lot is that you are living through a cultural revolution. The same that Mao did in China, where they're trying to actually refound the country. They look at themselves as Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, John Jay, and George Washington. They're trying to refound the country into something new, something weird, something not ordinary, something different. And it's hard to always notice that when you're living through it, right? Sometimes you don't notice it because it's so confusing. And I'm sure some of you sometimes look at your TV and say, what country am I living in? Not, I mean, 600 years in federal prison for a former president, all of that. But the one issue I think that is so against our senses, so against the natural law, and dare I say, a throbbing middle finger to God, is the transgender thing happening in America right now. Now, some of you, and I was guilty of this for years. I used to believe in this live and let live thing. I had strong beliefs of what God's design was, but I said, hey, if it's not bothering me, then I'm not going to talk much about it. And I'm sure some of you probably said something similar to that. But it was never about that. It was not about live and let live. It was live and let us rule. And what first went from, well, we have to tolerate. You're like, okay. Then you must accept. Okay. Then you must celebrate. It's like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that. And then you must participate. And if you can't participate, your kids must participate. And this used to be just kind of on the fringes. And, you know, those of us that do this for a living, we started to speak out more and more, especially 3 or 4 years ago. But I was told by the people in charge, oh, this is not, you know, it's just a little thing here, a little thing there. And the next thing you know, a story that shocked the world, those of us that pay attention, was all of a sudden when we saw a biological man win an NCAA championship in female athletics and swimming. And the people that told us that this was on the fringes, this was isolated, you see an institution destroyed in front of our very eyes. The very same people, by the way, that always are lecturing us about war on women, hashtag me too, were perfectly fine with a deranged neurotic man becoming an NCAA champion. But it didn't stop there. We started to see this in schools, in curriculum, pronoun usage. And I do not exaggerate to say this is now the new state-run religion of the United States federal government, where they have two LGBTQ alphabet mafia flags at the White House, where they have trans people taking off their clothes, not an exaggeration, on the White House lawn, where the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, comes out and says that biological men can give birth and lactate if they take the right drugs. In fact, the Biden regime says they're birthing people, they are not women. In fact, if you ever want to just see somebody short circuit, we have to thank the legendary Matt Walsh, who I will get here one night. I will. I'll get that done. We will. I will. And I'm not one to cheaply give out comments, but he's done hero's work. He's really special. Where he just asked the simple question that just breaks the matrix of the trans lobby: what is a woman? Well, tonight, we have a woman speaking to us. And it's actually the first woman ever at Freedom Night in America. That's not intentional, it just so happened this way. And this young lady, she had a national championship robbed from her. She's been lied about. She has been held hostage by left-wing activists at Turning Point USA campus events. And she's now one of the most important cultural warriors and figures on the landscape right now, arguing for really simple stuff, stuff that people would have rolled their eyes 10 years ago and said, okay, why are you saying this? It's normal. Now it's considered radical. We are in a church, and so it's important to remember Deuteronomy 22:5, a woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. You hear that, William Thomas? You're an abomination to God. So God created in his own image, in the image of God, he created a male and female. He created them. Distinctions keep us free. Men and women are not the same, and that's a beautiful thing. And tonight, we have one of the most powerful young women in America fighting the transgender mafia. Join me in welcoming Riley Gaines, everybody. Riley, welcome to Phoenix, Arizona.
I just want to start off by saying I might be the first woman to participate in this event, but is it just as easy as saying I identify as a man?
Well, Apparently today you can identify for whatever you want to identify. I guess, Riley, my first question is, what is a woman?
This is an easy answer. It really has been common sense. In the 250 years our country has been established, we've never struggled. And, of course, much longer than that. A woman is an adult human female. And then we can further define female as someone who has the capabilities to produce egg or ova.
Just so we understand, you're applauding like a biological textbook definition. Country's in a real sad spot, everybody. Yeah! XY chromosomes. Never thought I'd see it, I gotta tell you. Riley, let's take a step back. Tell your story. Here you are, University of Kentucky, ambitious young swimmer, minding your own business, wanting to be a national champion, and somehow now you've been thrust into one of the most consequential high-stakes culture wars in American history. Tell us your story.
I'll take you back even further than that, because I think it's important people understand the work that you put in your whole life to get to that point. I started swimming when I was 4, and I graduated when I was 22, so this means I spent 18 years of my life. It's impossible to put into words the amount of time and the sacrifices and the dedication that it takes. In college, we were practicing 6 hours in the water every single day, swimming 10 miles every day. 3 of those hours were before 8 a.m. So you practice from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. You go to class, you come back, you practice from 1:30 to 4:30. We ate dinner at old people time at 4:45. We were starving. Did your homework, you iced your shoulders, went to bed, did it all again the next day. And so my college experience was nothing short of crazy anyways. Freshman year, I had accomplished some pretty good things, but I was acclimating, adjusting, and so I knew I could do more my sophomore year. So sophomore year rolls around. March of 2020 is when we were supposed to leave for our national championships, which is the fastest meet in the world. It's the meet you work all year for. And about 3 days before we were supposed to leave, our coaches pull us out of the water and say, if you live in the dorm rooms, pack your stuff up. You have to leave tonight. And we never got to go home. That was not a thing we ever did. We were there all summer. You were there over Christmas, over Thanksgiving. You literally never got to leave. And so everything was shut down. And so I went home. Even in Tennessee, I can't imagine places like California. There were no pools open. There were no gyms open. And so I had to swim in the lake every single day. Put a wetsuit on and swim aimlessly. Came back junior year eventually, and I ended up finishing 7th in the country, which I was pretty proud of. You know, you're top 8, you're an All-American. But it was right then and there that I placed 7th that I knew my senior year I wanted to become a national champion, which would, of course, mean becoming the fastest female in the country in my respective event. And so senior year starts up, and I'm right on pace to achieve that goal. About midway through my senior season, I'm ranked 3rd in the country, trailing a few 100ths of a second behind the girl who's in 2nd, who I knew very well, because like in most sports, your top-tier athletes, you know of each other, regardless of where you're competing, because you've grown up competing against each other. And so I knew this girl in 2nd very well. But this person who was leading the country was a name I had never heard of. And this is, of course, the first time I became aware of a swimmer named Leah Thomas. And so there was a lot of red flags at the time. This was a senior. They were from University of Pennsylvania, which is not a school that historically produces fast swimmers. They were leading the country by body lengths and the 100 freestyle and all of the freestyle events in between until the mile. And if you think about this, 100 is a sprint, and a mile is, of course, long distance. And so for those of you who don't understand swimming, think about this in terms of your Olympic runners. You don't have your best 200-meter runner be your best marathon runner, but that's what we were seeing in this person. And so I didn't understand it. I'm looking up this name on this database called USA Swimming, where if you were to look up Riley Gaines, you'd see my time progression from when I was 8 years old. So I'm looking up this name, Leah Thomas. There's no history of this person. And I continued to head scratch until an article came out disclosing that Leah Thomas was formerly Will Thomas and swam 3 years on the men's team at University of Pennsylvania before deciding to switch to the women's team. And when I read this, I remember, of course, I felt so shocked, But really, I felt a sense of relief because I then went to look up who Will Thomas was on that same database. And I saw that this was a mediocre man at best, ranking 462nd the year prior when competing against the men. But that's really why I say I felt relieved, because I thought the NCAA would see it how I saw it and how my parents saw it and my teammates and my coaches and how anyone with any amount of brain activity would probably comprehend this. You're clapping too soon, because the NCAA did not see it that way. They saw absolutely nothing wrong with it, and so they announced that Thomas's swimming with the women was a non-negotiable. That first day of competition, I watched on the side of the pool as Thomas swam to a national title. Guys, these weren't scrubs. These are Olympians Thomas was beating. These are American record holders, the most impressive female swimmers this world has ever seen, again, by body lengths, which is significant in swimming. So that was the first day. And then the second day was the 200 freestyle, which is the event that Thomas and I raced in. And so we swam prelims. We both qualified top eight. We came back that evening for finals. We dove in the water. We raced. We touched the wall. And almost impossibly enough, we had tied, meaning we went the exact same time down to the 100th of a second, which is pretty rare when you're racing for, you know, a minute and 40 seconds and not even 1/100th separated us, which shows me that God has his hand on this. And so I get out of the water. And let me again reiterate, I of course knew all season what was happening was wrong. We all did. We talked amongst ourselves. We really whispered amongst ourselves. We knew it was wrong. But what really thrusted me over the edge, after we raced, we went behind the awards podium where typically you're handed your little $5 production trophy and you stand on the podium and you're named an All-American. And so we go back there and the official looks at both Thomas and myself. Thomas, who's 6'4", by the way. Wikipedia will tell you 6'1", and Wikipedia is lying. This official looks at both Thomas and myself and says, "Great job, but you guys tied. And we only have one trophy. So sorry, Riley, we're giving this trophy to Leah. Great job though." And I remember just this feeling of, I mean, my heart rate was still high. My adrenaline was high. I felt so belittled. I felt so betrayed. And I asked the question that no one dared ask all season. And I said, "Why? I know we tied. I know we don't necessarily account for ties, but why are you adamant on giving this trophy to a man in the women's 200 freestyle?" And the official, they didn't give him a script of what to say when this happens. And so he actually appreciated his honesty. And I watched as his face sunk in. He didn't even believe what he was saying. His eyes looked saddened when he told me, "Well, Riley, we've been advised when pictures are being taken, Leah has to have the trophy. Again, you can pose with this one, but you give yours back. Leah takes the trophy home. Again, end of story. There's nothing we can do." And again, that's what really pushed me over the edge. When they reduced everything that we, and when I say we, I mean every girl on that pool deck, everything that we had worked our entire lives for, they reduced that down to a photo op to validate the feelings and the identity of a male at the expense of our own, not to mention the locker room, not to mention the silencing and all of the other different factors that went into this. That's when I knew that I really, up until this point, truthfully, I cowered. I waited for someone else to. I thought surely someone else would. And when I say someone else, I mean a coach. I thought surely someone with political power. I thought surely someone's dad would come down there and yank this man out of our locker room. I thought surely someone who was supposed to be protecting us would protect us. And I remember distinctly, I'm standing on the podium holding this trophy. I know I have to give back. And it hit me. This realization that if we as women, really we as female athletes, if we weren't willing to stick up for ourselves, how could we expect someone else to stick up for us? We're standing on this podium applauding and smiling, and we want some hero to step in and save us? No, this has to come from us. And so that's kind of my journey, shall we say. I graduated with my degree in human health sciences and health law. I'd already accepted my seat into dental school and put my deposit down. I thought I was going to do endodontics, which is root canals. And almost weirdly enough, I think this is more painful. So here we are.
So, Riley, I just want to talk about a couple details there. So Thomas, the biological man, the cheater, he's a cheater. He's also a freak. He exposed himself to you and other young ladies, which is a crime, should have been arrested. He should be in prison. He's a pervert. Tell us about it.
We weren't forewarned we would be sharing a locker room. That was never made aware to us. That was never an arrangement that we knew about. The only time we became aware that we would be undressing inches away from a 6'4" man who's fully intact with an exposing male genitalia was when we were inches away from a 6'4" man who was fully intact with an exposing male genitalia. And if we had to see it, you guys at least have to hear about it. Again, it was just feelings of, first of all, let me set the scene of a swimming locker room, because it's not a place of modesty. These suits that you put on, your racing suit, it's skin tight. It takes about 15 minutes at least to put these suits on. 15 minutes of poking and prodding and tucking. I probably shouldn't say tucking, not the Target kind of tucking. I mean, like, your nail beds are bleeding by the end of this, right? And so it's not a place of modesty. But it's also a place of buzzing and chatter. This is the one meet each year you get to see your friends from all around the country. And so it's a loud environment. And so I remember I had my back turned. Again, lots of noise, and all of a sudden it gets dead silent. I'm like, that's weird. And I turn around and I look up. And again, there's a man undressing out of his women's swimsuit. And it was just, of course, it's awkward, it's embarrassing, it's uncomfortable. But I think the best way to describe this, without even being overdramatic, is that it was traumatizing. And not even really just traumatizing necessarily because of what we had to see. But for me personally, it was traumatizing to know just how easy it was for these people and these authority figures to totally dismiss our rights to privacy. And so I immediately left the locker room and went up to one of the officials on the pool deck. And I said, you know, look, I know the guidelines that allowed Thomas at the meet, which was a mere 12 months of HRT, which is hormone replacement therapy, which there's no amount of HRT that would make a man and woman comparable. But I can promise you 12 months is nothing. I know the guidelines for the meet, but what are the guidelines that allowed a man into our locker room? And so nonchalantly, this official looks at me and says, oh, well, we actually got around this by making the locker rooms unisex. And the first thing that came to my mind, okay, unisex? You realize by admitting you changed the rules, you're admitting Thomas isn't a woman, right? You realize that, right? And secondly, unisex. So any man, any coach, any parent, any official, any pervert who wanted to would have had full access to our changing area. And bare minimum, we weren't even told about it. It was the most violating experience. And there's one more part about this meet that naturally the media has done a really terrible job of covering. At the same meet where we had Thomas, who is, of course, a male identifying as a woman, we had another trans athlete who was a female identifying as a man. We were told we had to use he, him pronouns when referring to this individual. Formerly Izzy, now goes by the name of Isaac, swam only in a Speedo. So imagine this. It's the finals of the 100 freestyle. You have a woman in a Speedo and a man with a bulge and a women's swimsuit racing next to each other. You guys are laughing, but that's literally what we saw. I mean, it was like the Twilight Zone. And so Izzy, now goes by the name of Isaac, ended up finishing fifth in the country in the 100 freestyle, which again is a huge honor. But if we were really basing this off gender identity, why was Izzy, now Isaac, competing with the women? And I can answer this question. It's because Izzy, now Isaac, would never and will never be able to compete at that same level against the men. But now, she is. Finishes dead last every single time. As a top five in the country female, the one meet I watched of hers this year, she went to Yale also. What's up with these Ivy Leagues? I thought these were supposed to be places of higher education. The one meet I watched of hers this year, the only male swimmer she beat was a male swimmer with one arm. And I don't even say that to be funny. I say that to perfectly highlight what's at jeopardy and who is at stake here.
So Riley, you were traumatized by the pervert, and I had you on the show, and we made a lot of headlines, Riley, Gaines, and I, because I had her on the podcast. I get a little fired up. Kind of have a reputation. And I asked the question, I'll ask it again, which is, in the 1950s, the men would have arrived and it would have been taken care of. And, you know, the media lost their mind when I said that. So I said it again and again and again and reemphasized it. And so, but Riley, to just say it more simply, it must have driven you and your family, because here's this obvious injustice. You had something stolen from you. It's an act of theft. No one stands up, and you just have to act as if this is normal. I mean, just talk about how many people allowed evil to happen. This was not just a single person. We're talking about the University of Kentucky, University of Pennsylvania, the NCAA. We're talking about political figures. What I'm getting at, Riley, is this was basically a conspiracy of silence.
We were failed by so many, making us the collateral damage in the process. And yeah, make no mistake, it's not just women's sports. It's academia. It's corporate America. It is the churches. There are so many institutions and places where we're seeing these cultural issues just grab us by the throat, which is a pretty chilling thought, to be totally honest, which I know it's kind of grim to say that. But really, I say it's grim. It's not grim because we know who wins, but it is a grim thought to think about. But I'll talk about the emotional blackmail that we as athletes went through and what kept us silent for so long. Because as you mentioned, we all knew this was wrong, talking amongst ourselves. And as I said, whispering amongst ourselves, we knew it was wrong. But we were told, you can't take a stance because your school has taken your stance for you. We were told, you will never get a job. You will never get into grad school. You'll lose your friends. You'll lose your scholarship and your playing time. This will follow you forever. You'll be labeled a transphobe anytime you look up your name if you speak out. And you don't want that. When Thomas's teammates sent an email to their administration, 16 of them, plus their parents, signed on to this email expressing their discomfort in the locker room, their university responded back with, and I swear I have a screenshot of it, "If you feel uncomfortable seeing male genitalia, here are some counseling resources that you need to seek." They were forced every week to go to mandatory LGBTQ education meetings to learn about how just by being cisgender, they were oppressing Leah Thomas. They told us that if we did speak out and any harm whatsoever came toward Thomas's way, whether that's physical, mental, emotional, through social media, whatever that harm looked like, then we were solely responsible. And we would be responsible for a potential death, making you a murderer. And you don't want that, do you? You don't want to have blood on your hands. So I suggest you be quiet and listen to those who know what's best. But make no mistake, again, it's not just the athletes who are silenced. It's the coaches. It's the parents who work these corporate jobs who are terrified of defending their own daughters because they feel threatened that they might potentially lose their job. These coaches, I was nominated for NCAA Woman of the Year after this, which is the most prestigious honor. It's the most prestigious honor for collegiate female athletes because it encompasses more than just your athletic achievement. where I had accomplished incredible things. I'm a 12-time All-American. I'm a 5-time SEC champion. I'm actually the SEC record holder in the 200 butterfly, which means I have like really big manly shoulders. Olympic trials, all of those things. And so athletically, I had achieved some great things. But just as much emphasis as I put on my athletics, I put on my academics, where I was also the SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year. I had scored in the top percentile of the dental admissions test to get into dental school. Graduated with very high honors, but also my service, which is something I feel very passionately about. Even still, I'm the Special Olympics swim team coach for Tennessee. I was the SEC Community Service Leader of the Year. And so all that to say, this award meant a lot to me when I was nominated. Each university gets one nominee. And so at University of Kentucky, we had the number one WNBA draft pick and Abby Steiner, who's breaking world records in track and field and a national championship volleyball team and a national championship rifle team. But they chose me. And so I was so humbled by this until a full list of NCAA Woman of the Year was released. And it was not exclusive to just women, because Leah Thomas was University of Pennsylvania's nominee. And so when I found this out, first of all, the award was totally devalued and meaningless to me. I didn't even want the stupid thing anymore. But the NCAA was having a big conference where they were going to announce their winner. So I thought, what better place to put myself in front of these people than here? I had tried sending letter after letter and email after email, no response. So I figured I'll go there and I'll hand to hand them a legal demand letter expressing that if they don't stop discriminating on the basis of sex, there will be legal action, which let me inform you, they haven't. Just yesterday in cycling in the NCAA, there was a man who won this honor, stole this honor. I handed them a legal demand letter, but they also had this big convention hall where all the athletic directors would walk around and companies and organizations could buy a booth. And so I figured, I'll buy a booth. And so I applied with my name, Riley Gaines. I'd been outspoken at this point. Denied. I'm like, that's weird. I'm trying to give you $2,000. I applied again. Denied. Came up with an alias and applied. And they were like, of course we'll take your money. So I get into this convention center. And I have these little bracelets made talking about Title IX and pamphlets. And every single athletic director who walked by, I shared what we went through. And I told them about the locker room. And I told them about the silencing. And I told them about the unfair competition. And every single one of them, every single one, said, thank you for doing what you're doing. Keep going. And at first, you know, the first 60 or so, I was like, this is great. You know, we're garnering support. This is huge. But then as it continued, I began to feel so frustrated. If we're all on the same page, where's the discrepancy? And so I began asking, you know, that's great. You say you support this, but would you put your name to it? Oh, no. You see, we really can't have lawsuits. You know, I'm the breadwinner for my family, and I really can't risk losing my job and very quickly turn and alleviate themselves from the situation entirely. Even the president of the NCAA, who publicly released a statement in the days following that national championships, and I remember it word for word because it's so funny. He says, I unequivocally stand in my decision to allow Leah Thomas to swim with the women because it's based in evolving science. That's what he says publicly. But privately, at this same conference, I see him. And I'm like, I'm not letting you get away. And so I go up to him and he says, keep going. Keep fighting. Thank you for doing what you're doing. But the irony of him saying that as if he's not the one we're fighting. So all of that to say, the people who are enforcing this don't even believe it. How could someone believe this? They're cowards, they're spineless, yes. And they have no backbone.
Well, and that's exactly right. In a minute, Riley, we're going to do questions. There's two things I want to cover, though. The first thing I want to mention on that, though, this is why I call them a mafia. It is an alphabet mafia. They extort, they blackmail, they threaten. I'm a big fan of the movie Godfather. Anybody else, Godfather? You wake up with the horse's head in your bed. It's not a joke. You wake up with a rainbow flag on your mailbox. You're marked for extermination. These people are zealots. They'll hunt your family down. I'm not joking. I have full-time security because the trans zealots want to murder me. Right, Riley? They tried to, they took her hostage at a Turning Point event. These are not peaceful people. These are not polite people. A lot of them are pharmaceutically deranged. Okay? They're mentally disturbed people, and we give them these unbelievably powerful pharmacological compounds. Which, by the way, they go on to shoot up schools like in Nashville or attempt to shoot them up in Colorado. By the way, where's the trans manifesto in Nashville of the shooter that killed a bunch of young Christian kids? Where'd that manifesto go? It's weird how that disappeared. No, these people are zealots. They're not live and let live. They're mentally disturbed people that want to murder many of us. Okay? And we act as if this is some sort of a debate, like, oh, we can win them over. And we must prevent them from being able to participate in these athletics, from going into locker rooms, and stop cowering to the mafia. Stop giving these terrorists what they want. They're holding our entire country hostage. Okay, so Riley, two things. Number one, talk about how this is your story. The accusation or the criticism that some of these people would say, oh, that's bad, but it's just isolated. But Riley, you weightlifting in Canada, track championships in Connecticut. I hope, and Riley will do a much better job than I am riffing. This is widespread in sports of all ages, all different athletics, Riley Gaines.
To believe the narrative that it's a non-issue and that it's not happening, just as you mentioned in your opening, that's how we got here, is because we believed that for too long. That could not be further from the truth. It's happening in every sport, every state, every level, every division. And I know this because I get the messages. I get the messages from the young girls who are dealing with this. They're in sixth grade. They're playing basketball, yet they have boys on their middle school basketball team. They don't know what to do. I get the messages from the parents who literally will call me crying watching their daughters get obliterated in their sport, knowing their daughter is being exploited in a locker room. I get the calls from the coaches who don't know what to do, who don't know how to defend their athletes. I get them all the time, daily, daily. And it would break your all's heart if you read these messages, just like it does mine, which is why I feel so passionately about fighting for this. Because again, I see what's at stake if we don't. For too long, we've been kept in the dark, and for too long, we didn't have someone to defend us, to really act as a megaphone for us. I could list 100 examples, seriously, off the top of my head right now. I won't bore you. I promise you, they're there. It's happening. Constantly. And to believe the lie that I see all the time, I travel state to state and I testify on behalf of these fairness and women's sports bills being put forward. And that's the argument every time. Oh, we're just Nebraska. We only have 4 trans athletes in this state. No, that's a lie. You have 4 recorded trans athletes. Same thing with the NCAA. They say there's only 32 trans athletes in the NCAA. That's a lie. There's a D3 diver who I just heard about. There's a male on the lacrosse team at Syracuse and all of these other schools. To believe that it's not happening is to totally fall right into their hand.
And I wanted to speak to the men here. We as men can't put up with this. We need to stand up against these psychopaths. I think there's 2 things happening here. And then I want to talk about your faith, Riley, and we'll do some questions. Number one, I think that feminism has for so long been trying to make women into men. And the next extension of that is just women, quote unquote, becoming men. And feminism wants men to become women. And they've done a good job of that. Because in a properly structured society, it's the man's job to say no. It's the man's job to enforce rules, order, discipline, boundaries. This should not happen in America. And it's happening because we have become a less masculine country. This should not, and by the way, we have some amazing pastors here. I'm so glad. how many times I hear from pastors, Charlie, I don't want to get political. I'm not going to mention this. If you do not mention the trans zealotry as a pastor, resign from the ministry. You must resign from the ministry. This is one of the biggest issues happening in America. Riley, we'll do questions in a second here. Talk about your faith, how important it is for you. And what I want you all to understand, 3 years ago, Riley Gaines was a college student and was an NCAA athlete. And now she's been thrust into the culture war. Many of you say, Charlie, I'm just this, I'm just that. If you pursue excellence, you have no idea what God has in store for you for a fight for righteousness and goodness. Talk about your faith, Riley, and we'll do some questions.
I'm very fortunate to have had a strong family foundation, which I think is a very important piece to this, is having two parents who love each other, who have stayed together. I have an amazing three siblings, all my grandparents. I'm very fortunate to have a very strong family foundation. That being said, my parents raised me in the church. So I grew up with a spiritual foundation. But I will tell you, this past year, I have been spiritually awakened. I have seen just so clearly how God works and how he moves and how he has his hand on me. But just as clearly, I have seen how his opposition works and how he moves and how he deceives and how he manipulates and how he lies. And I know this. It's really no longer a battle of right versus wrong or good versus bad. This really is moral versus evil. And I looked that evil in the eyes in San Francisco, and let me tell you, it's soulless. It is vengeful. It is violent. It is hateful. And they do it in the name of love and inclusion and tolerance and acceptance and welcoming and all of those different things. But let's not forget what love is. Myself, I constantly refer back to this term of true love. And those terms, truth and love, they're synonymous. It is loving to say the truth. That is what love is. Anything else, that's not compassionate. To lie, to affirm someone's delusions. When, in the past, would we ever tell an anorexic person who believes they're fat that they're actually fat? Would we tell someone with schizophrenia that these voices they hear talking to them, would we tell them that those voices are real and that they're there? Same thing with a manic episode. We don't do that, but that's what we're seeing happen now. Back to the faith piece, though. I struggled with this at first because before anything, I want to live a Christ-like life. That's what we're here as Christians on this earth to do, is to spread his word, his message, his gospel. And so I'd have people telling me, you know, you say you're a Christian, but this isn't what God would do. Our God loves all. And while I, of course, knew that, I struggled. Am I doing the right thing? I would talk to my people around me who were strong in their faith, my youth pastors, different people. And they reassured me, Riley, of course we have a God who loves. But we have a God who hates sin. And we have a God who holds people accountable. These people, they're desperately looking to put their identity into something. But as Christians, as humans, the only place we will find satisfaction is putting our identity in Christ.
Amen. John 10:10, the enemy comes to lie, steal, and destroy, but I, Jesus, have come to give life. And life more abundantly. Let's line up for some questions, everybody. And I know that some of you might have a lot of questions for me politically and stuff. I'm not interested in that tonight. Keep your topics for Riley, for the trans thing, for sports, athletics, education. If you guys have, you guys can call into my radio show or email my radio show. We are blessed to have Riley here tonight. So let's keep that around that topic and that genre and maximize our time together. We'll start right over there. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Riley, for coming and for just being so outspoken. My name's Kim Miller. I'm the founder of Arizona Women of Action, and we have been fighting this issue. In fact, we have joined with our state superintendent of public instruction, Tom Horn, to fight and defend the Save Women's Sports Act in Arizona. So we are right there with you. And we've been on media trying to stand up. The women who are behind us in this group of Women of Action have all said, we're all in. We don't care if we get bullied. We don't care if we get hated. We have to stand up. And so just like you did, we're trying to do that. But my question is, when we go and talk to people, so often it's women who are the ones fighting against us to defend women. And our message has always been, just like you said, that you can't have compassion without reality. And so how do we, if this law gets overturned, or if we lose this court case, and these boys who are, they're saying, are prepubescent, or they've been on, you know, gender hormones, that they're okay to compete against girls as if hormones are the only difference between men and women. That if that happens, what do we do to say, how do we instruct women to fight? Do we tell them to just keep their girls off the teams?
I think it's a really important and interesting point how you bring up it. It tends to be women fighting women. Yes. Don't even get me started on Megan Rapinoe or the stupid press secretary or any of these women who claim to really pride themselves on advocating and fighting for women, yet they're the ones. But I think that speaks to our innate differences. Women tend to be more agreeable. We tend to be more emotionally involved. We tend to be more apologetic, which only furthers our point that men and women are different. But I think it's important to continue, of course, raising awareness, because now more than ever, and we're seeing this happen, we saw it with Bud Light, we've seen it with Target. People now more than ever are looking for alternatives. They're looking for ways to show that enough is enough without publicly being outspoken. Because I understand, not everyone can do what we do, stand on a stage, and for other reasons other than just feeling like they don't want to be ostracized. Some people don't. It's nerve-wracking to be on a stage and different things. But people now more than ever are looking for alternatives. And so I think continuing to spread awareness. For the longest time, I didn't think a boycott was the way forward. I thought, you know, no, we shouldn't have to compromise. But I'll tell you when my perspective on that changed. When this bill was introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives, and it fell entirely on party lines, meaning 219 Republicans voted in favor of protecting women's sports, and 203 Democrats voted in opposition of protecting women's sports. Entirely on party lines, and that's when I realized, okay, it's not legislation that's going to make this change. Or if it is, it's going to involve too many girls getting exploited in locker rooms or hurt or missing out on opportunities before change is really made. It will take a boycott. We've seen boycotts in the past be effective. And we need that now. Like the NCAA, they're not following the red or the blue. They follow the green. We have to hit them where it hurts, which is the pockets. And so a lot of the times that means withdrawing your participation or funds or whatever that looks like. But I think Mr. Horn is incredible. And the work you guys, I've followed y'all's work, and it's really awesome. And so I will be... Anytime you need me here, I'm here.
Hey, Charlie. I was just asking, should we forgive gays if they have gone back and forgiven, like, ask God to forgive them? And
so should we forgive homosexuals that have left the homosexual lifestyle? Absolutely, yes. Well, more importantly, God forgives them. And in fact, we must understand homosexuality is a behavior. It's not an identity. This is where our culture, and this is a thought crime. You are not gay. You act gay. Okay? You act homosexual. You act gay. And so when someone ceases to act on a same-sex attraction, which some people have and some people don't, we should... of course, welcome them with open arms, and there's rejoicing in heaven when anybody repents. In fact, repentance is one of the most beautiful things a believer can do. In fact, we should celebrate that, and we should say your sins are completely and totally forgiven. But I just want to reemphasize this, is that your identity is not in your sexual attraction. Your identity is in who is your Savior. That is your identity, in Christ alone. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, I just want to pray to God, the Holy Spirit, and Lord Jesus to give me the right words to say. Okay, so people ask me all the time, what's my pronoun? You know, like, do I think I was born the wrong gender? And no, you know, I was born a female, like you said earlier. There's no amount of pills, no amount of surgeries that I could take that's going to make me a man at the end of the day. Now, as far as, you know, who I love, and that's just people, like all people. I don't know if you guys have watched the service from about 4 weeks ago, what did Jesus say about transgenderism? But if anybody didn't, I highly, highly suggest you go back and watch that beautiful service. So I don't think this has anything to do with, like, equality. I feel like something behind the scenes has to do with just further discord in America. And if you agree with that or what, because I think all of America could see, you know, you're the winner, you know, like there's like bar none. And as a solution, do you think maybe there'd be a women's, a men's, and then that community, you know, have their own? Because, you know, there needs to be a solution to every problem instead of just talking about the problem. So if that would be a good suggestion, maybe.
This one is interesting because if we create a third category, it's really just another place for men to win. It will be a male who identifies as a woman beating out the females who identify as men. And I also think, again, with this whole thing, and we've seen it progress, I think especially since COVID, we came back and a lot of things were really different. And what I realized is if you give an inch, they take a mile. We have never in our history needed to do that. And we still don't need to do that. There are only two options, male and female. Everyone falls into one of those categories. Amen. Even if I hear the argument all the time, okay, what about intersex? If you have a Y chromosome, you've gone through male puberty. Therefore, biologically, you're a male. Everyone is male or female. We don't have to, and we shouldn't create a third category, I believe. Plus, there's how do you raise funds? How do you get enough people to play? How do you get enough people to watch? I certainly wouldn't watch.
No third category. So Mr. Thomas, William Thomas, could have had a delusion in his head that he's a woman while competing against other men and finishing 462nd. Instead, we had to reconfigure all of our systems so Riley, with XX chromosomes, had to compete against delusional freak with XY chromosomes, so then she had to tie. Here's the problem with the trans thing. Why do we have to change our systems for your mental problem? We don't. Compete in the chromosomal category that you were born into. This is one of the big problems, is that we should not have to redesign society just because you're tormented. We will love on you if you're tormented. We're going to find you healing through Christ if you're tormented. But do not inflict your torment on others. And that's what's at the root of the trans thing. Hurt people hurting people, broken people breaking people. Mr. Thomas is a broken person. Only Jesus can heal Mr. Thomas. And we actually did him a disservice by furthering his campaign of brokenness into the female category. A properly configured society says, bro, you got problems. Let's help you. But we're not going to have you go create more chaos and confusion and be a thief against women that competed their whole lives to become NCAA champions. Thank you.
Yeah, Riley, I'm a swimming official for NC2A meets. Wow. And this year we've been asked to kind of overlook or not comment on the gender issue with a little bit of a hint that we may not be asked to officiate if we do or do something at the meet. That being said, there's a new rule that just came out that I was reading about this year about swimsuits at NC2A meets. The rule basically states that an athlete swimming in an event should wear the swimsuit that is for that event, suggesting, of course, that a male identifying as a female would have to wear a female suit, and then a female identifying as a male would have to wear a male suit. I don't know if you're familiar with that new rule, but I'd like to hear your comment.
Well, at least they're fully going into it. If they're going to believe it, I mean, they're going all the way. But I'll tell you, this Leah Thomas thing happened at Georgia Tech. I had the host rep of Georgia Tech at the meet send me a screenshot of what the NCAA had messaged them prior to allowing them to host the meet. They said, you're not allowed to speak out in opposition of this meet being here. And if you do, there will be consequences. And it sounds like the same thing. And it's discreet. They do it in this sneaky way. These rules. You know, the only rule the NCAA came up with after the tie between Thomas and I was now they have a rule of what to do during a tie. And they give the trophy to whoever is older. That's how they saved their own butts. That's how they justified their actions, because Thomas is, in fact, older than me. Not banning men from women's sports. Now they have a rule of what to do during a tie. And so this whole swimsuit thing, again, it's literally what we saw. And it sounds like the Twilight Zone, but we're living in it. It's like a Babylon Bee headline, but like real life. I truly find myself now, I'm reading something, I'm like, wait, is this like The Onion or whatever it's called, or is this real life? And majority of the time, it's real life.
I want to thank you for being here. I want you to pray about something. You as a referee, if you were to ever referee over a meet like Riley, I would encourage you not to do that, to walk away as a referee. I'm not telling you to do that, but if referees refused to sign on to these venues, we could kill this thing. So just pray about that.
Hi, Charlie, Riley. My name is Jeff, and I'm a husband, and I'm a father of two kids. Also, one's a 13-year-old daughter who competes somewhat in gymnastics. And I guess my question for you is, you talk about your frustration, kind of feeling like you and other women are going at it alone. And I can tell you, us men, many of us, don't want to have you be in that situation. We want to stand by you, and we want to reach out and step out when called to. I have not butted up against my kids competing against people who are trans or anything like that. I haven't come into that situation. But just as the average citizen like myself, aside from being involved in school board meetings, which I am, and being involved politically, I've befriended elected officials and so forth. What suggestions do you have just in everyday life for us to come to defense in this type of situation? What can we do?
One, before anything, always stand firm in the truth. I know we've said this a few times, that we can't pander when it comes to reality. Secondly, be willing to defend your daughters. Too many times, I hear from parents who aren't willing to do so, and that, like, breaks my heart. Even these Democrat representatives who are voting in opposition of these things who have young daughters, they're sellouts. We often ask ourselves the question of where are the feminists, right? Which is a very valid question, because where are the feminists? But as Charlie mentioned, I think just as much as this conversation gets centered around girls and women, we need strong men. And so while you should be willing to defend your daughters, teach your sons masculinity. There's this saying, and it's hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times create weak men, weak men create hard times. And it's incredibly interesting because you can see the cycle play out throughout history. I think the last time we had a society full of strong men was in the 1940s during World War II. I saw this tweet the other day that said, in the 1940s, we had men lying about their age so they could enlist in the draft, and now we have men lying about their sex so they can get into women's sports, which I just thought was pretty funny and pretty telling, and it shows how that cycle remains true. And so be willing to defend your daughters and teach your sons masculinity. And I appreciate the work you do and being involved in the way that you are. I think everyone needs to get more involved.
Yeah, and I would just add, one of the great tactics that I think we as conservatives have underutilized is civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is biblical. Daniel participated in civil disobedience in Daniel 6. There's rules of civil disobedience. You must do it when there's an injustice from a tyrant, an autocrat. You must be willing to accept the punishment, and you must be able to win over other people while doing it. Some of the great societal changes occur in civil disobedience, and it's always peaceful, right? So what does civil disobedience look like? You know, for example, let's say that your daughter's on a basketball team and you have to compete against a man. You just go sit on the court. Sit down on the court and you don't play. And you film it and you put it on Twitter. I would retweet that, right? Girls, you know, basketball team in Mesa, Arizona, refuses to play and sits on the court and cancels the game. Like, we need to come up with creative, peaceful ways to be able to send messages when there are these injustices. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dr. Courtney Phoenix. I teach at an amazing, wonderful university here in the Valley, Arizona Christian University. And our foundation that we speak upon is transforming culture with truth. And that has never been more true than the last 10 years. And I have the honor of teaching pastors in Christian ministry capstone classes, and we talk about these issues. But and this question is for either of you or both, what would you say to these upcoming pastors of how can they transform culture with truth in midst of everything going on?
So that word transform is metamuphe in Greek, which in concordance comes up only a few times. So in Romans 12:2, it's the most famous verse that involves transform, and it's a do not, which is one of Paul's favorites. So Romans is basically the Christian's constitution, right? If you want to know the gospel, just read Romans. It's really, really deep, and you could spend a whole lifetime. Romans 12:2, do not conform to the ways of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so that's the first way, is you tell these young pastors, do not conform to the way of this world. Don't conform to the trans zealotry. You don't conform to hookup culture. You don't conform to all these different things. But then you allow yourself to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It goes on to say, and then testing it to God's perfect and pleasing will. And so, yeah, if you want to transform culture, you must first reject it, not conforming to it. And then finally, if you look at Jesus, you know, in Matthew, Mark, and John, it talks about being salt and light. Salt and light are transforming agents. By definition, they change that what they come in contact with. So Jesus does not want us to keep the environment the same. He wants us to go into something and make it either saltier or lighter. And so you have to find environments that need work, and you have to be active agents to transform them for goodness and righteousness. Hey, Anderson.
Hi. Hey, Riley. Thank you for coming out. So basically, I've been a swimmer for the past 7 years, and this is my senior year. And I've also decided to take up the role of leading FCA, which is Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And so for those past 7 years, we've always had it on campus. But last year, the school decided that we're not allowed to have it on campus, and we need to have it outside because other students of other religions, they wanted to have their own like study of their like religious texts. And I just wanted to ask you, like, what words of advice or, like, tips do you think I can do to help the school, like, have us back be on campus?
It always seems to be an attack on Christianity, which is, again, if we're looking at the breakdown of faith, if we're looking at the different pieces of this, like the silencing, the denying of truth, the changing of the language, it really is Marxism. In terms of what to do, I think it's important to garner support. Make it public. Let it be known that what your school is doing. I don't imagine the people of Arizona would stand for this. And so if you have public opinion on your side, your school will cave. Charlie and I were just talking back here before this that every institution wants something.
Always.
Finding out how you can hinder them, what you can use to really hold it above their head. Because again, I really think public opinion is important, and you certainly would have it on your side on this. And so I think that would be useful to garner and show to your school, look, we want this. And when I say we, I mean the people of this state.
Isn't it interesting that they never tell the gay club to go off campus? So you get gay flags and all this. I will say that, Anderson, I'd be happy to talk to you privately, but I would say this about this. There was a great lesson the last couple weeks. These schools are way weaker than they purport. They're straw man. One of my favorite stories, and we helped pour gasoline on it, was young Jaden in Colorado with the Don't Tread on Me flag. And his mom had the wherewithal to film that meeting, goes viral, and the whole school backs off. Sometimes it's a little bit of exposure, a little bit of sunlight, a little bit of pressure, and these institutions can break. And so I would hold the line, and I would call them out and find the hypocrisy and don't give in. Thanks, Anderson.
Hi, my name is Roy. I've worked in the mental health field for years, and I'm seeing what has been contained into that spill over into trying to be societal norms, and this is a good example. But I want to say thanks for your bravery and your courage. Keep it up. But also, I was wondering, has anyone thought of legislating for mandatory blood tests for hormonal levels to match the norm of the gender that you're competing against? You know, so that, like, say, Leah Thomas, his testosterone levels should have been checked, you know, because that's unfair. Women's are lower. So that should be mandatory as far as I'm concerned. Anyone thought of that?
So that's like what the IOC has implemented, which is the International Olympic Committee. I believe their level is 5 nanomoles per liter of testosterone to compete in the opposite sex. That's not computable still to a woman's testosterone level. Men on average have 20 times more testosterone. So asking them to get to the average woman's level, which is anywhere from 0.8 to 2.5 or so, so around 1 nanomole per liter, that would be incredibly dangerous for a man, first and foremost. Secondly, there are differences outside of just testosterone level that contribute to success, especially in something that requires athleticism or sheer strength, like lung capacity, like the obvious things such as height and limb size and foot size, your heart size. Those things aren't changing even with testosterone suppression. So I don't believe that regulating hormone levels and only hormone levels is a way to make competition fair.
And also bone density, muscle mass in addition. I will just say this, you said something that I wanted to make sure I mentioned earlier. Gender does not exist, only sex exists. I encourage all of us to change our language. Gender does not exist. It is a fake construct. So people say, what gender are you? That is not how people talked 100 years ago. There's only 2 sexes. There are 0 genders. It is a made up academic term to get us to believe that you could change your God-given identity. We have to change our language and reject it completely. Sex exists. Gender does not. Now, you might have a horoscope. You might have personality. You might have, you know, certain, let's just say, leanings one way. But gender is a made up construct. We must reject it. As soon as we yield that ground, we're already losing. All right. Next question. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Are you going to hold it for a minute? Riley, my name's Howard Sauter. A little bit of a preamble before the question. I got out of the Army in the late 50s, soon found myself a police officer refereeing the riots that came out of the Vietnam era. One thing that stuck in my mind was a particular saying that the rioters had that I thought very poignant, although impractical, and that was, what if they gave a war and nobody came? So my question to you is, what if they gave a swimmate that was trans-related, and nobody showed up?
That's what needs to happen. It would just take one time that way. It would take one time to make an effective statement and that would say, we've rolled up our sleeves and we're saying enough is enough. It would take one time. So that needs to happen. I will say, when I was in the situation that I was in competing against Thomas, I tried talking with the other girls, asking them what happened if we wouldn't race. And no one was willing to do it. Everyone was scared. You know, it's my last swim meet. And I fell into this boat. I didn't feel like I should have to give anything up. I was like, no, this. I worked for this. I deserve to compete. It was my last swim meet as well. Of my whole 18-year career. But looking back now, I think it happened in the way that it did for a reason. But looking back now, I wish I would have tried harder to get us to not compete.
Yeah, and to add on, this is the, you know, Riley, you're a difference with here. But men, we wouldn't put up with this. If there was somebody actively cheating in our athletics, we would either boycott or we would just fight them. Like this, we would not put up with it. No, we're just different. I'm not saying that's a good thing. But you're trying to, if I was in high school and there was, like, for example, a 35-year-old NFL player going up against, we wouldn't put up with it. We would yell so loud. We would get so intense. We would rally the troops. We would boycott. And it's just men or women are different. You're right. Women are more agreeable. And women right now are just being bulldozed by men, which was always the argument of feminism, which is hilarious. We don't want to be dominated by men, so let's be dominated by men. Next question.
Ms. Gaines, what has been the best part of being courageous?
I have gotten to meet so many amazing people. And being in environments like tonight and looking out and seeing so many people who are really ready to take action, you might think I'm here inspiring you guys, but it's this that inspires me. I have gotten to meet so many amazing people, go to so many amazing places and really make impact, which is what I knew when I began to speak out. What I wanted to do is make impact. Whether that's traveling state to state, whether that's testifying in front of Congress or the Senate or whatever that looks like, these different policy changes I've been involved in. I have been involved in disc golf policy changes. I know nothing about disc golf, yet here I am advocating for these women. So it's kind of just this empowering feeling. And myself, I have a younger sister who's a phenomenal athlete. She's a state champion gymnast. She's really incredible. And being just married myself and hoping one day that I get to be fortunate enough to have a daughter of my own, I can imagine being in the position that I'm in, really seeing what we saw, experiencing what we did, and not fighting for her. I don't know. It's just, it's things like this that I know that's a pretty cliche answer, but truthfully, it revitalizes me and helps me further go on, if that makes sense.
I want to make sure I mention, before we get to the next question, there was a recent piece in news that goes to show this is deeper than sports to that other question. So there is one institution that has banned men who think they are women and women who think they are men from crossing over. And it's not basketball, it's not football. It's the International Chess Association. Now, I did a whole hour of radio on this. And the media did not like what I had to say. Now, you would think, why would men be better at chess than women? Now, some people say, oh, Charlie, are you trying to say they're smarter? No. Hear me out. This shows that you can take all the drugs you want. Our brains are different. And I'll prove it to you. Men are better at macro. Military strategy, planning, offensive coordinating of football. You sit down at a party, and if I don't know if I'm sitting next to a man or a woman, if they start talking about politics, the stock market, or macro events, it's a man. If they're talking about their kids, the sicknesses in the neighborhood, it's a woman. Very micro. Women are masters of the micro. Men are much better at macro. This is why you'll see a man with untied shoes talking about how we have to save us from some sort of existential evil. By the way, we need both the macro and the micro. But the chess thing is so interesting because the International Chess Foundation says we cannot allow men who think they are women to compete in women categories. It's not fair. This has nothing to do with testosterone, nothing to do with estrogen, nothing to do with lung capacity. Our brains are different, everybody. So different. All right, I had to get that off my chest. Next question.
Hi there, Riley. My name is Kayla. I'm actually a Dream City College student. Woo! Yeah, so that's fun. So my question is, about a year ago, I decided that I wanted to go into education because I felt that there weren't a lot of educators who truly love children and wanted to see them thrive in California. About a year ago, I ended up calling the State Board of California to see what the requirements were for K-8 education. And right now, the state is mandating that for kindergartners, so 5, 4, 5, possibly 6-year-olds, they are teaching gender studies in the state of California. My predominantly Republican county is having a really hard time fighting this. They're trying to stay back from it. The school boards are pushing back. but they can only push back so far. I ended up leaving California to move here because I decided I wouldn't teach gender studies in school. School is not a place to teach about gender. So I believe that there are plenty of good Californian educators that really do want to see kids thrive and want to see them grow and don't want to be teaching gender studies. So my question is, how would you encourage the people in California, the educators in California, who are standing up for all the right things to continue doing that?
This is why they're all moving to my home of Nashville, Tennessee. But seriously, it goes back to the same thing. You have to create a coalition of these educators who know this is nonsense. And it's hard to create that coalition because, again, I was in that same boat. And it's hard to get everyone on the same page. It's hard to have these conversations. But you're exactly right. There are more people than just yourself who know this is wrong and goes against their moral compass. But creating this coalition and the same premise of holding the line, saying we won't teach this, or what happens if we don't teach this? We will not comply to this. It's hard because there are so many who do. At any cost, they will. But having enough people who won't is just powerful, and it sends a statement.
Thank you. And I would just say, you know, for those of you that are in the classroom, just say, you're going to have to fire me. I'm not going to do it. It's that simple. Just do not actively do something that is evil against your values. There's worse things than losing your job, everybody. There's worse things than losing your job. All right, two more. We'll go here and then here. Yes. Yes, sir.
First of all, I want to say, where are my CC people at? And then my question is for Riley. What was your mindset training and how did you cultivate that mindset to be an incredible athlete?
That's really sweet. And I feel like that often gets lost in the mix of all of this. But my mindset to training was to develop a sense of consistency, which I actually think is really applicable to life outside of even training. Come in every day and be consistent, whether that's in your diet, whether that's in your sleep schedule, whether that's in your studies, your training, your weightlifting, whatever that looks like. I think consistency is the most important thing. And that's something I really tried to develop myself. And I actually felt like my junior and senior year, once I had kind of acclimated to the training and all of the lifting of the weights and stuff, which was new to me upon getting to college, I'd finally developed that sense of consistency, even among my attitude. Every day I came in with an attitude of, I'm here for, you know, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. While I'm here, I'm going to give it everything I have. And when I leave, I'm not going to think about it, whether it was good or bad. And so consistency to me is the most important thing. And again, that transcends far beyond just athletics. Do you play sports? What do you play?
I do jiu-jitsu right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
This is for Riley, so I'm going to end it off with this Proverbs from Proverbs 31:8. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves and for the rights who are destitute. So recently, I'm part of a men's Bible study group from my church from Highlands, and we just recently just got back through Tender War from Silas Weber, which actually kind of reading from the book, which has literally been a year ago, like, and now I'm kind of seeing all this stuff happening in all the corporate world, which kind of speaking of which, I just started to get back for the whole legislative thing in the legal world. I just got back from the training video. There was a transgender person in the whole video. And I was like, is this the direction where this country is going? Like, affecting with their own churches, which I think that's kind of against everything where we're going for, and corporate things. So this is, as someone who is also a blog writer and actually do a very devout Christian, what could we do as Christians, how we can actually speak up against those who actually go against everything what the Bible stood for?
Well, lucky for us, we have a beautiful handbook of what to do when these issues, again, these cultural issues are happening. And you just read it. We cannot continue to throw our moral compass out of the window because we're on this earth for a blink of an eye. This is no amount of time when you're looking at eternity and what eternity means and how we can reach that eternity in heaven. And we reach that eternity in heaven by standing firm for what God and Jesus stood firm for.
how to have grace, but say truth. And I think it needs to be a balance, right? Because if you're all truth, no grace, you're self-righteous. And if you're all grace with no truth, you're just incompetent. And so we have to be able to hold all of those things that Jesus held close to his heart to our own heart. Again, we have to live a Christ-like life before anything.
Thank you. So before closing thoughts, mark your calendars. We have Senator Josh Hawley coming next month. Very exciting. That will be October 4th. So October 4th, right, Matt? We have Senator Josh Hawley who will be speaking about his new book on masculinity. And so it's a perfect kind of pairing with this. Riley, final thoughts.
I'm just grateful. As I mentioned, my heart just feels kind of overjoyed with gratitude and different things being here, seeing so many people who are really ready to do something, to get involved, to be proactive. Because again, for too long, I think we've been reactive rather than proactive. And seeing you all, it just kind of fills my cup. And I'll say Senator Hawley, he's amazing. He was on a couple of the Senate Judiciary hearings I was on, asked some pretty funny questions. That one hearing where it was, what's his name? The guy from Louisiana, the senator from Louisiana.
Senator Kennedy.
Oh my gosh, Senator Kennedy. And he's, well, Riley, now what do you know about this whole thing? And I had this human rights campaign president sitting next to me, and she looks at him and she says, well, Serena can beat men in tennis. Serena Williams can beat men in tennis. And so that's when Senator Kennedy looks at me and he's like, well, Riley, what do you know? And it's like, Serena and Venus Williams lost to the 203rd ranked male player in a blowout while he was smoking and drinking in between sets. So that's what I know. But just really grateful. And if I can be of any encouragement to you guys, please know that we are in the overwhelming majority, not just the overwhelming majority of Republicans or Christians. The overwhelming majority of the general public has acknowledged that we have gone too far. The pendulum has swung too far. And know that. That's important to know, really. And again, know it's liberating to speak the truth. You feel like a weight is off of your shoulders. And once you do, you won't go back. So I appreciate you guys.
We must speak the truth. Give it up one more time for Riley Gaines, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company.
Like super woke.
When I grow up.
When I grow up, I want to be hired based on what I look like.
Rather than my skills.
I want to be judged.
By my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted.
Based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up.
I want to be offended.
By my coworkers.
And walk around the office.
On eggshells.
And have my words policed.
By HR.
Words like.
Grandfather.
Peanut gallery.
Long time no see.
No can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.